Barry Esterbrook decided that if he was going to eat an animal, he wanted to know every single thing about it. His taste buds dictated his choice. He'd focus on the pig. Well, Barry is a journalist who's been recognized with quite a few awards for his work. He researches what we eat in his blog, Politics of the Plate, his articles and talks, and in his first book, Tomato Land, about Florida's controversial tomato industry. His latest book is The Story of the American Pig, Pigtails, An Omnivore's Quest for Sustainable Meat. Now, this segment contains material some listeners may find upsetting. Barry, welcome back.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Barry, you brand the pig the wonder animal. Now, why?
Well, on many counts. I mean, first of all, the sheer intelligence of pigs. I mean, before I'd started my research, I knew pigs were smart. But just what they're capable of intellectually is beyond anything I suspected. They're as smart as a three-year-old human being. And that's scientific research showing that. The second thing is that pigs have really been with us throughout our entire cultural revolution from the minute we first abandoned being nomads as human beings 10,000 years ago. The pigs were there. They were helping us along. They helped us become who we are. When we just set out to explore North and South America from Europe, we couldn't have done that without pigs. Christopher Columbus, on his second voyage, brought along a bunch of pigs to let them loose on the island of Hispaniola to feed his crew.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even during the American Revolution, our soldiers were fed dried pork. That's what gave them the strength to fight the war. So pigs have always been here. They helped us open up the West. Early pioneers probably couldn't have settled down except they brought a couple of pigs along with them.
Why the pig, though? I mean, why? I'm thinking, what is it about the pig that made it so important in these situations?
Primarily, no large domestic animal that we eat reproduces at anything close to the rate of a pig. I mean, a modern pig, a sow, can have up to 30 piglets a year, more than two litters. Even in the old days, the original, you know, pigs that we domesticated would have 6 or 8 piglets about every 8 or 9 months. So you compare that to a sheep, where you get maybe 1 or 2 lambs, or a cow, where you get, you know, you're lucky to get one, and that cow would take 2 years to become slaughter size. Well, a pig's ready to be slaughtered in 6 months. So you can see that they're an incredible source of protein.
Well, let's talk about where that supermarket pork chop comes from. You researched quite a few places that process pork, and you talked to so many people who had firsthand experience. What did you see and what did you learn?
Well, I perhaps got my greatest education one day in Iowa, in central Iowa, where I visited a pig farmer, a single pig farmer, who raised 150,000 pigs a year in 40 low-slung, warehouse-like confinement barns. We spent the day together. You enter these barns, and before I went in, we both had to strip naked and take a thorough shampoo and shower, leaving our clothes behind and sort of passing through into this sterile zone to prevent Z's from getting in there.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, I saw the most memorable sight was when I went into a low, dark barn and saw 1,500 sows. And these huge animals spent their entire lives inside metal cages that were so small that the pigs couldn't even turn around. Their sides pressed out. They were like fat people on the middle seat of an airplane. Their sides sort of pressed out through the bars. And this is the way they lived their whole life, just producing piglets. They were like machines. The smell hit me viscerally. It was like nothing I'd ever smelled. And what I was breathing was ammonia and hydrogen sulfide. Those are poison gases.
And coming fact, the from the waste?
Coming from manure, which is held in vast pits directly below where the pigs live. It would be the equivalent of you filling your basement with sewage from your toilet and emptying your basement once a year. And, you know, these gases would kill the pigs, except there's huge fans on the end of these barns that look like jet engines blowing that air out.
How do they survive under these conditions?
They're basically kept alive just long enough to reach slaughter weight. The fans keep them going, but much of it is due to these pigs are fed constant low-level antibiotics. It'd be like you waking up every morning and taking an antibiotic, even if you weren't sick, just to prevent them from getting sick. And so that enables them to live long enough to reach slaughter weight, 6 months of age.
Oh, my. And this is the way commercial pork is produced?
This is the way 97% of the pigs in this country today live. They never see the light of day. They never set foot on anything but a bare, hard floor. And they breathe that poisoned air 24/7.
Aren't there laws against this? She says naively.
There would be laws against this if it were your dog, if you did this to a dog. But no, there are no laws. This is all perfectly legal. In fact, it's state of the art. This is the way pigs are raised.
You talked about someone that you met who was actually arrested for essentially reporting this kind of situation, reporting what went on in these confinement areas?
Right. It was a man who lived in north central Missouri and worked at a farm that raised 2 million pigs a year. Imagine that.
My.
And, you know, he was fine with it until one day he encountered a sow that she'd gotten too old and had reached the end of her life, and the attendants had simply pulled her out of one of those stalls, put another sow in, and left her lying in an alleyway in the barn to die. She couldn't walk. She was being given no food or water. And this fellow came back a couple of days later, and she was in the same place, but weaker still. And he finally went to the head of the barn, and he said, "Do something about the sow. You can't do that." And the guy told him to mind his own business. And that just infuriated this fellow. So he went out to Walmart and bought a couple of those disposable cameras and took pictures inside the barn of piles of dead piglets left there rotting, sows with enormous tumors the size of soccer balls on their shoulders, sows with open gaping sores. It was horrific. And then he quit.
And where did the arrest come in? How did that come about?
It was about the time that he was going to testify in a court case against this farm. That all of a sudden he found that he was under arrest, accused of stealing some animal drugs from the barns. He was a total surprise to him. Eventually, after a year and his entire life savings, he was cleared in about 10 minutes by a jury because there was really no evidence. He thinks the pork producer was behind it, but of course, there's no proof of that.
Just going back to the environmental side of this, that stench. You hear about what are called lagoons that are attached to these essentially pig factories and the kind of pollution problems there are. But what about the people who live near these places? That stench must carry, right?
Well, calling them lagoons has to be one of the greatest euphemisms of all times. These things are cesspits. They're full of feces and urine. and occasionally dead pigs, whatever else gets dumped in there. They're quite often black in color, no blue lagoon or clear lagoon here. And eventually they fill up. And the way that farmers dispose of the manure in these lagoons is spraying it into the air in many cases. In these huge, they call them manure cannons, which look like giant lawn sprinklers. And they blast it up into the air over the fields.
Is this to fertilize?
Well, it's far too much. It's much more fertilizer than any field needs. That's the problem. It provides too much fertility to the soil. A lot of it washes off into rivers and streams. But much of it, as they're spraying it, blows in the wind and comes across neighboring properties. I spoke to one woman in North Carolina named Elsie Herring who, you know, the first time it happened to her 20-odd years ago, she thought it was raining. Well, it wasn't raining rain. It was raining something entirely different. And it's to the point now where she can't really hang laundry outside. She's never sure whether she can mow the lawn. On a summer's evening, she can't sit on her porch and enjoy the cool air. It's just a constant rain of this manure, and it's poisonous. It contains hydrogen sulfide, which has been proven to raise people's blood pressure just breathing it. So it's not just a whiff of country air. It's a poisonous gas that's spreading across the land.
But what about protection from local government? Because this kind of thing, it ruins people's properties. It lowers their property value. It's an intrusion.
This particular woman and many others like her have been to every branch of local, state, and federal government and gotten the runaround. Hmm. No help whatsoever. Again, this is all legal. The problem is the laws governing agriculture date back to the days of old MacDonald's farm when, you know, you'd have a few pigs rooting around the back of the barn, not tens of thousands. And that same laws apply. So they can do this legally. There's really nothing illegal about what they're doing.
Okay, and I imagine the power of the pork producers is pretty strong in those environments.
Well, politically, wherever pork is produced in large quantities, you know, big ag is king. You think of states such as North Carolina, Iowa, Minnesota. Big ag is a very, very, very powerful political force. And it doesn't matter whether the politicians are Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, you name it. They dance to the tune of big agriculture.
What about the workers in these places?
Well, as you can imagine, the workers suffer inside the barns. The workers suffer from a host of respiratory illnesses, diminished lung capacity, chronic coughing. If you have asthma to begin with, you can't work in one of those places because you have a seizure the minute you go in, an attack. But you can develop asthma by working there. Even veterinarians who, you know, visit these places only occasionally have diminished lung capacity. Again, you're breathing poisonous mm-hmm. gases. And another thing, the people who work inside hog confinement buildings are often exposed to deadly bacteria that have become resistant to antibiotics. They become resistant because these pigs are constantly fed a diet of antibiotics, low-level antibiotics, and so the germs that are resistant are the ones that survive and go on to breed. And you know, in a study done in Iowa a few years ago compared two groups of pig farmers. One group used antibiotics and another group didn't. And every one of the workers in the farms that used antibiotics were carrying something called MRSA, a resistant staph bacteria that can be fatal. None of the farmers who didn't use antibiotics carried MRSA.
Is there any possibility that this also passes from the to the consumer who eats meat from such, you know, facilities?
Yes. Numerous studies of pork in supermarkets in the United States show that the meat is carrying not only MRSA, but several other resistant bacteria.
But would they disappear with cooking?
If they're properly cooked, they would disappear. But on the other hand, they're also carried in the environment. There have been much research done showing that MRSA and other resistant bacteria can be carried on the wind. They can be carried on dust. They can be carried on workers' clothes. You know, and then the other side of the coin is the people who work in the slaughterhouses where pigs are processed. Working in a slaughterhouse used to be a very good job. It used to be every bit as good, high-paying, as any manufacturing job, and no more dangerous. But over the past 30 years, it's become one of the most dangerous jobs, and the wages have fallen by about 40%. So working in a processing plant is also very dangerous.
Barry, it cannot all be this black in terms of the pork industry. I mean, there's got to be another side to this, or other sides.
Well, there is. In fact, the book does have a happy ending. There are an increasing number of people who are refusing to raise pigs according to the agricultural formula. They're raising pigs on pasture, allowing pigs to be pigs, to root, to roam, to form their own social groups, to feel the air on their backs, to wallow in mud. And the result is a very well-raised animal that doesn't pollute and produces extremely good meat. 10 years ago, it was very difficult to find this meat, but increasingly, it's getting much easier. You can find it at most farmers' markets. Large national companies such as Nyman Ranch distribute pork that's raised in this way. And the big benefit, though, is the consumers get a really good product. Once you've tasted well-raised pork, I tell people it's the difference between a January tomato in a supermarket and a nice summer tomato from your garden. Pork and well-raised pork is that different. You really can't go back to the old stuff.
What should you look for to find this pork? Is organic, by the way, one of the assurances to look for?
Organic, sadly, doesn't say a lot about how an animal is raised. It doesn't guarantee that it's, you know, that it's been pastured and run free. You're better to look for people who actually claim that their meat is pastured, who advertise that their meat clearly is antibiotic free, and preferably that it's been fed a vegetarian diet, because commercial pigs can actually be fed rendered pig flesh.
Barry, in the book, you talk about a farmer who is raising his pork, as you've described, out in pastures, and the pork is utterly delicious, but it runs close to $15 a pound. Now, the average pork chop in a supermarket might be $3.50 a pound. This is where it gets tricky, because very few people can afford that more expensive pork.
Well, you're right. It is much more expensive, but I always use the example of the McDonald's quarter pounder. You know, $15 a pound for pork sounds expensive until you divide that figure by four, come to something less than $4, and you realize that, you know, the quarter pounder of meat you get in a McDonald's quarter pounder it costs about the same amount. So it's really how we perceive our food costs as much as anything. But yes, it is more expensive. It's more expensive because the old heritage breeds which produce this great meat don't have the number of piglets that an industrial sow will have. They're not raised in crates, so there's a greater chance that when the piglets are born, a sow may accidentally roll over and kill one. Once the piglets are growing, they grow more slowly than a commercial pig. They take maybe 8 months versus six. Mm-hmm. The upside to that is a slow-growing pig produces very fine muscle fiber, and which gives you tenderness and juiciness. And it goes right down the line. It costs more to get a pig slaughtered humanely in a small abattoir and butchered by professional meat cutters than it does to process a pig in one of these slaughterhouses that do 20,000 pigs a day, four pigs, like a pig every 4 or 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. So right down the line, there's increased costs. And, you know, what you're paying for is meat that doesn't pollute the atmosphere. What you're paying for is knowing that the animals were well-raised, they weren't submitted to these atrocious conditions, that the neighbors living near a small pig farm aren't gagging every time they go out to mow the lawn, aren't sickened. And you're also paying for the fact that you're getting something really good, really tasty, mm-hmm. really good.
So when we're going to go out and buy our pork, what words should we be looking for on that label?
Well, I would say the easiest and a great starting point would be to look for pork that's clearly labeled antibiotic-free or no antibiotics used. That at least is going to get you clear of the resistant antibiotic issue. And it'll often mean that the farmer had to raise the pigs under better conditions. Mm-hmm. The second thing I would look for is a farmer who says that his pork is pastured, meaning that it's raised outside and not in one of these confinement buildings. A third thing you might look for is organic, because organic animals don't get antibiotics, and they're also not fed animal byproducts, slaughterhouse byproducts in their food. I think those are three things to look for.
Well, Barry, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
Barry Esterbrook is author of Pigtails, An Omnivore's Quest for Sustainable Meat. You can find an extended version of our interview with Barry at splendidtable.org.